ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी. Let's start with verse 8. That's where we ended last time. Chapter 8, verse 8. I think I briefly talked about 9 too, but this is where I want to start. Abhyasa yoga yuktena, abhyasa yoga yuktena, chetasa nanya gamina, chetasa nanya gamina, paramam purusham divyam, paramam purusham divyam, yati paratani chintiyan, yati paratani chintiyan, kavim puranam anishasitaram, kavim puranam anishasitaram, anoraniyam samanis maredjaha, anoraniyam samanis maredjaha, sarvasya dhataram achincharupam, sarvasya dhataram achincharupam, aditya varanam tamasah paraskat, aditya varanam tamasah paraskat. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa na anya gamina paramam purusham divyam yati parta anachintiyan kavim puranam anushasitaram anoho aniyamsam anusmaret yaha sarvasya dhataram achintya rupam aditya varanam tamasaha parastat. These two verses go together. Krishna's talking to Arjuna and saying, who is the one that reaches me? How do they reach me? Who reaches me and how do they reach me? Abhyasa yoga yuktena. By one who has the yoga, which is abhyasa. Yoga means like their spiritual sadhana, the yoga, is abhyasa. The abhyasa is practice, it's meditative practice. Chetasa, by a mind which has this yoga that we call abhyasa, practice over and over again of recognizing the nature of myself. It'll become clear in a minute. Abhyasa yoga yuktena, chetasa, by the mind. And with a mind that has this abhyasa yoga, mm-hmm. and a mind which is na anya gamina, which has no other destination. Gamin is somebody who's, it's a destination, my mind is going in this direction. That's the destination. The one who has no other destination, no other desire, other than me, other than the Paramatma. But so that person who's single-pointed in terms of their destination, what they truly want, and who repeatedly brings the mind in meditative practice, brings the mind back to myself, abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa, so with such a mind like this, paramam purusham divyam yati. That person, he parta, anuchintiyan means present participle, contemplating on me. And the anu means after. Chintiyan means contemplating or thinking about. So contemplating on me, but anu, after shravana manana nididhyasana, after having understood. So after having understood clearly, mm-hmm. after having recognized me through shravana manana nididhyasana, through shravanam, having recognized me, then having recognized me, one yati goes to that purusha. Purusha means person. You know, there's a whole suktam, like we've learned Medha suktam and Durga suktam. We've learned different suktams. There's a sukta, a very famous one called Purusha suktam. Purusha suktam is in praise of the Lord, of Ishwara. So here, the Purusha, it's easy, even as a jnani, for you to say, I am a Purusha, I am a person. I'm a person here, and the truth is, the real person is the Atma, right? This person is, in reality, the Atma, the conscious being. So the conscious being, who is now in the form of this body, mind, sense organs, is a person. But the Paramam Purusha, the Purusha that is infinite, that is supreme, that is the Paramatma, that's Brahman, that's Ishwara. So Ishwara is called the Parama Purusha. The Purusha which is infinite, and I love it because it makes you understand, when we use the word Purusha, it makes you understand that this whole universe is a person. Mm. Just like you are the person, what makes you a person is the self. So this whole universe has a self. It's Ishwara. Ishwara is a person, but it's an infinite person who is Divyam. Divyam means self-effulgent. So this means consciousness. The person who is infinite, whose nature is pure consciousness, that's Chidananda, you know. So the person of this whole. So here, he goes to meditating by meditating upon that Paramam Purusham, which is Divyam, Jyotatmakam. Jyotatmakam means that which is self-evident, self-effulgent. So meditating on that one, he goes to that Paramam Purusham, means he reaches that person. Reaches in terms of jnanam. How does he reach the Paramam Purusha? He reaches the Paramam Purusham recognizing I am that. That's the distance. The distance is not a distance in terms of space, time or space. The distance is in terms of ignorance and knowledge. So once that through anuchintiyan means having contemplated over what you know. Anu means having been taught. Meditating on that, contemplating on that, right? So that is your practice, that contemplation. Is the abhyasa means practice, it means repeatedly doing something. So your yoga, your commitment is to that repeated practice. Repeated practice of what? Owning up your own nature. So by the mind that does that, not wanting to do anything else, the mind that does that, that person goes to that Paramam Purusham Divyam that is self-evident, he parta, just having contemplated on that. So it's a distance between knowledge and ignorance. Right? So the jnani recognizes, I am that. And until recognizing that, he's a long ways away. He's a long ways away in terms of ajnanam. Because for the ajnanam, I am this. Right, I am this. That's what we mean by that avichara siddha. Right? This is the reality. This is what the established self-evident nature of the world is, what I perceive through my sense organs. That's before vichara, before analysis, before shravana. So Swamiji said elsewhere that shravana, when we say shravana, it comes from the root shru, which usually we only think of that as listening. But shru, it means listening, but not just listening to random sounds or listening to statements, like say, for instance, if you were to say a statement like, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. So say we're going to listen to that now. Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi. Nothing will happen. So the shravana is not just merely listening, it's what we call vichara. So shravana has that, the shru dhatu, that verbal root shru, has that sense of vichara. Vichara means analysis. The whole teaching methodology of the Upanishads is an analysis of the nature of reality, so that your mind, in fact, goes step by step by step to the recognition of your being, to the Satyam Nitya. So that is the vichara. And so having been exposed to Shravana, to that vichara, then one, meditating upon that, then one gains this Paramam Purusham Divyam as my own being. The gain is the gain of the infinite. You can't gain the infinite. You must be included in it. If something is infinite, if something is infinite, there's no room for you. Right? You either are that, you are that, or you are not. Right? And so here it is the gain of the infinite, and the gain of the infinite is the recognition that I am that. Okay? So then he goes on here in the next verse with other words which expand upon the Padamam Purusham Divyam. If you notice, all three of these words are in the accusative singular. He yati. He goes to that Padamam Purusham Divyam. Who is Kavim? Kavim means Sarvajnaha, the one who has all knowledge. The word Kavi also means a poet, is a Kavi. A poet is someone, as Swamiji will say, someone for whom the verses come easily. You know, verses come easily. Who have like a second sight, who see, are able to see what others can't see. They have like a second sight, that's a kavi. And also one whom verses just appear in the mind is a kavi. But also the kavi is, and when we talk about the kavi is Ishwara, the one who is Sarvajna, who has all knowledge. So kavim. Puranam means ancient. And here when we speak of ancient, in terms of Brahman, we're speaking of timeless. The one who never not was. Right? The one who is free from time is Puranam. It literally means, you know, ancient, Puranam. Anushasitaram. That word, all these are synonyms. Anushasitaram means the one because of whom there is order in the universe. It's the Dharma. That is the one who, because of whom there is order, because of whom there is Dharma. The one who holds the order together of the universe is the Anushasitaram. Because of whom there's Dharma, because of whom there's just the order of science, the order of mathematics, the order of the creation, the order of punya and papa, of karma. So all of this, the whole universe is a manifestation of laws and a manifestation of order. The one because of whom that order is Brahman, is Ishwara, Anushasitaram. Anoho Aniyamsam. The one who is smaller than the smallest. Anu is like an atom. So sometimes they translate it as atom. So from the anoho, from the smallest, that's how we say it, from the smallest atom, from the smallest thing that there is in the creation, if you get down to the smallest part, Brahman is smaller than that. So the smallest of the smallest. Anusmaret, the one who yaha, is that anusmaret, yaha? Anusmaret, smara comes from smr. Smr means to, well, sometimes we just say to remember. But actually, smriya, or smara, means to bring to mind. When we remember something, we bring it to our mind. Anu means that after having known, after having shravana, manavyasana, but shravana, everything is really amounts to shravana. Let me just talk about that for a minute for this anusmriya. Shravana means doing the vichara, of the Upanishad vichara, by means of the acharya, the teacher. Being exposed to the Upanishads as taught by the teacher. Otherwise, you're doing your own logic. You're going to be caught you're going to be caught within the dream. You're going to be caught within duality. So the Upanishads have to be handled. And so what Shravana is the teaching, you know, the teaching of the Upanishads and all of the analysis that's involved in that, so that you actually understand what the Upanishad is saying. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you agree with what the Upanishad is saying, but at least you understand clearly what it is saying. Manana comes in. So if the shravana, if that shravana is enough, in other words, the unfoldment is taking place, there's a lot of logic in the unfoldment, in the Upanishads themselves, there's a lot of explanation and debate, do they really mean this, do they really mean that? Once you understand it clearly, and you don't have any doubts, you see it, that can be enough. All you really need is shravana, unless the shravana is not enough. If the shravana is not enough, we have to move on to manana. What manana, and which we all do anyway, okay? So, but what mananam is, if you understood what the Shruti says, but you say, but why can't it be like this? You know? So now we're bringing in logic to refute or to answer your objection. So that's why the study of all of the darshanas, which you've heard Swamiji say, all of the study of all of the different darshanas, all of the different schools of thought, all of the different religions, all of the different philosophies, are worthy of your study. Because they bring up so many objections or so many doubts that you may not have thought of. They may be lingering in there, but you hadn't thought of it, right? And so all of those doubts need to be brought up and resolved. And then, so those are the doubts that are systematized doubts, but then as individuals, we have our own set of doubts. Why couldn't it be like this? Or why does it have to be that way? So manana is absolutely necessary to, we say, strengthen the post. You know, they use this example of when you dig a post hole and you stick the post in it, and the post is standing in there, but it's wobbly. It's wobbly because it needs to, some dirt has to be pounded in around the edges. And so that manana is pounding that in, you know? It is resolving every possible doubt that the buddhi is capable of putting forth. And when we're studying all of these different darshanas, these different schools, you know, a lot of the doubts are not your doubts. That is not something where your mind has gotten caught. In fact, if the doubt arises, so does the answer. That means it's not a doubt for you. Say you're studying the darshana, you know, and as you're reading their doubt, it never becomes your doubt because you see what it is, you know, as it comes up. That's not a doubt. But then as you're studying these darshanas, you could go, oh, I never thought of that. You know, I never thought of that. Maybe, what is the answer to that? Then you need to do the, then you need the manana. So that's why we study all of these darshanas, you know. You yourself are your own little darshana. Darshana means philosophical system, right? You're your own little philosophical system. You know? So you have to bring up, you know, your point of view. You have to bring up your point of view. And that's why, I mean, Vedanta, well, not just Vedanta, I mean, the East welcomes that just generally. But in Vedanta, it's essential because it's your mind that requires the clarity. Brahman doesn't require clarity. Atma doesn't require clarity. Ishwara doesn't require clarity. Ishwara, there's no avarana, there's no covering. There's no jnanam. Atma is just fine. It's just like the sun is fine no matter what it's illuminating, right? It doesn't matter. The sun can illumine anything. It is absolutely fine. Atma is completely fine. It's the mind. You know, it's the mind that has the problem. The buddhi. You know, and then all of the emotions and all that, that's where the ajnanam is. And so that ajnanam has to be cleared in the mind. It has to be cleared through knowledge. It just doesn't blow away. You know, we can't put up some ajnanam and go and have it disappear. But you can't meditate it away either. You know, that's why this anuchintiyan, and here anusmarate, one should bring to mind their knowledge anu after having gained it. Right? You should bring this, like, say you bring to mind Brahman as the Paramam Purusha, who is Divyam, who is Kavim, who is the smaller than the smallest, who is all knowledge, who is all of these things. Even if you say that, say you haven't been had any teaching, and you bring to mind the infinite Purusha, who is self-effulgent. And you can meditate on that. Meditate on the infinite Purusha, the infinite person, the infinite self-effulgent person. Right? That's the meditation. Nothing happens. All of those words are just self-defined by you. They don't mean anything. And so until these words resolve into the being, the conscious being that you are, you can't meditate on them because you don't know what they mean. So as you'll say like this, it's like meditating on, instead of I am the aham, the paramam purusham, you might as well say I am gagubuga. That's his word, gagubugai. I am gagubugai. I am gagubugai. Because the words don't mean anything. So that's what anu means. You know, one should bring to mind, he who brings to mind, having understood, after having understood these, the one who is kavim, puranam, anushasitaram, anoho, aniyamsam, then he says, sarvasya dhataram. Sarvasya dhataram means the karma phala dhata, the one who gives the fruits of action. If you do an action, you're going to reap the results of that action. So the one who is the what we call karma phala dhata, the one who's the giver of all of the fruits of actions. Again, it gets back to the order. But if you do an action, in the famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita, the Swamiji quotes this all of the time. Think of yourself, realize yourself as the one who does the action, but as Bhagawan, as the one who gives the result. That is the crux of that karma yoga buddhi. I do the action, means it's the jiva, if I get that jiva twin. I do the action, but Bhagawan gives the result. Otherwise, we never have a problem. You are responsible for the action, you're also responsible for the result. So I'll do this, and this is what I'll get, no problem. I do this, and I'll get that. I do this, and I'll get that. Oh, it's not helpful at all. I do this, and I'm not sure what I'm going to get back. I know what I want, and I know why I'm doing it sometimes. I know why I'm doing it. I know what I want. But what I'll get is a different matter. Right? That's where we're in for a lot of surprises. That's why our desires, we don't always fulfill our desires. So here he says, again, sarvasya dhartanam, I am the one who gives, who is the ordains, right? Is the giver of all of the fruits of action. So sarvasya dhartanam. Achintya rupam means that which cannot be objectified. Chintya means it can be thought of. You can have a thought of it. You can't have a thought or an objectification of the self. The only reason you are known is because you're self-evident. Right? It's not because of the mind. Yourself can't be an object to the mind, it's the very self of the mind. But the reason you know yourself, I mean experientially as me, not in terms of knowledge, the reason that you know yourself is because you're self-shining. You don't need to bring in anything, nor can you bring in anything to know you, right? To know you in the sense of illumine you. See, in this, in terms of the world, I know these things because my mind, all of these perceptions, because my mind forms a thought modification of whatever I'm perceiving, and that is illumined. Right? If my mind doesn't form a thought modification of, say, the painting, then I can't know it. I can't have the experience of it. I need to see it, or I need to remember it. The achintya is going to be for both. Either I perceive it, you know, or I remember it, I bring it to mind, and that's how it's known. That's how it's experienced. How do you experience the self? The self, the Atma, is never not experienced. It's never not experienced. That's why we don't call it an experience, because it's an experience you never not don't have. It is always 100% wholly present. It is the substrate experience of all experience. It's the truth of all experience, in fact, and it's never not there. So if it's never not there, it's always fully present, then how can it be objectified? The fact is that it's already completely objectified at all times. It's not objectified by the mind, it's the self of the mind. When we say it's already objectified at all times, what I mean is it's self-evident. There's no subject-object relationship there. And so the Atma, the self, is that which cannot be objectified as an object, cannot be known as an object. Right? It can be recognized by the mind as that which is its own self. Right? But the mind, the tricky thing here to understand is the mind is not illumining it. The mind is differentiating itself, Maya, from its own substance, from its own being. You know, just think, sometimes if you think like the pot recognizing the clay, the pot is the clay. There's no distance between pot and clay. And clay is what is actually there. And so here, what is actually self-evident, you know, self-luminous consciousness. Your being is not something that you can objectify because you're already there. How can you objectify it? And what is going to split you from the subject into the object to objectify it? And so you have to recognize the self-evident nature of it, not as an object that we're... And that's another problem in life, in terms of our means of knowledge. We are only used to objectifying things. That's how we know them. Mm-hmm. Subject-object. Mm-hmm. You know? And those things that we objectify can come and go. That's the nature of the creation. The self never comes and goes and is never an object to be differentiated from the subject. All other perceptions, you can differentiate the subject from the object. Here there is no division, there is no differentiation. So it's a matter of differentiating from the standpoint of the Maya, or from the standpoint of the mind, that which is constant. The mind isn't constant, but itself is constant. So you have to differentiate the changing from the changeless in terms of your own inner experience. What is changeless is the self. Its luminosity never wavers. What is changing is everything else. And so in fact, it should be kind of easy. It should be easy, and really, honestly, in the sense that what is changing is Maya, and what is present and pervasive to that changing experience is me. So just look into your own inner experience. What never changes, what never modifies, what is always absolutely present, the absolute center of all your experience, both the center of it and pervasive to all of your experience, and it never changes in the slightest way. So if you look in your inner experience, just remove anything that you can. If you can remove it, it's Maya. If you can't remove it, it's you. it's as simple as, if I'm looking this way, my mind is filled with this side of the room. This is my scenery here. If I go this way, totally different. This isn't there anymore in terms of my perception. But I'm there. Right? I'm still there. So what goes, what remains? What about any thought that you have? Any imagination that you have? That's why when we do meditation, we just watch the thought flow. What is good about that is what changes is Maya. What remains is you. So you just have to say, okay, what can't I get rid of? Even doing meditations on non-existence. You can have a meditation on non-existence where you get... Non-existence means you have to get rid of everything, right? You have to get rid of everything. And the only thing you can't get rid of is what's left. And that's not non-existence. That's you. And so these are good this Achintya Rupam, I think it's really powerful. But this Achintya Rupam, he goes, it's Aditya Varnam. Aditya means the sun, saying it's the color of the sun. It's like, it's the nature like the sun. Means the sun is often used for, as a worldly example of consciousness, because the sun is self-effulgent, in a sense. You know, it's self-shining. It illumines everything. It doesn't have any kartritvam. It doesn't have any doership. It's not deciding, let me illumine, or let me shine on you, or let me perform the act of illumining. It is the luminosity itself. There's no doership involved. It's simply his, and because of it, everything is illumined. Nor does it have preferences, all illumined this and not that. So the Atma doesn't have any preference at all. Whatever is there is illumined. Whatever is manifest, that's it. And it's manifest having for its being the self. So the self is not going to say, nor can it say, I only want to illumine Dharma. I don't want to illumine a Dharma. I want to only illumine beauty. I don't want to illumine negative things. No. The whole Ishwara, whatever it is, all of the polar opposites, you know, has for their being one limitless, unattached consciousness. We could say also that the sun also is asanga. It's asanga. It's not attached to anything. It's not touched by anything. It's not the sun. The sun rays don't become contaminated. Right? The sun itself is asanga. It's not attached. It's absolutely free. It's free of any kind of kartritvam, any kind of doership. Right? But there's a problem with the example is that the sun can disappear at night. Right? The sun can disappear at night. So the next thing he says is tamasah parastat. It's beyond darkness. The Atma is self-evident like the sun, but tamas means darkness. It also means ignorance. Tamasah is in the sixth case, parastat. It's beyond. Parastat means it's beyond. It's beyond darkness. It's not affected by darkness. Not affected by darkness, physical darkness, as the sun can go away, right, from us, but the Atma can't go away from us. Right? The self can't. The self illumines darkness, and it illumines. It's not opposed to darkness. It illumines darkness. That's what's so very interesting. The sun is opposed to darkness. When the sun is there, the darkness is not there. But the sun can be in places, where the darkness is allowed to abide, right? But not for the Atma. The Atma illumines the day and illumines the night. Like if we were to shut out all the lights in this room and it was pitch black, then you would be illumining the pitch black, right? You're not opposed to it, you'd be illumining it. Just like you illumine your knowledge, all of the things that you know, you also illumine all of your ignorance. Yeah, all that you don't know. If I say I don't know Chinese, or I don't know this, the billions of things I can think of that I don't know, plus the billions of things I can't even think of that I don't know, even that I don't know. But I can illumine what I don't know. I know what I don't know. I know what I don't know only in terms of consciousness. I'm conscious. I illumine that. And so the Atma, which is a Sangha, which is free, which is self-evident, illumines even where it illumines even the darkness. So the one who anusmarate, the one who brings this to mind, contemplates upon this, the self who is all of these things, that one, paramam purusham divyam yati, this goes back to the previous verse, that one goes to this paramam purusham, which is divyam, how recognizing I am that. Okay, let's stop there. We're going to another section. That's enough for today. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.